Annie, the Radabaughs, for all of their work in finding pieces and poking and prodding us until we can be able to perform them. But it takes a lot of work to find those pieces, to be able to find something that works with the choir, and for all the choir members to put in that that time is absolutely wonderful. So nice to be able to have music on the Holy Day. If you've ever taken a trip, you ever gone on a road trip? Anybody gone on a road trip before? A few people. Some people don't want to admit it. This is audience participation. I saw how many cups of coffee there were on chairs before services. I have a job to do. So if you've been on a road trip, there we go. We got everybody. If you've been in a car, you have likely heard this phrase. You have heard it. Are we there yet? Exactly. Are we there yet? Well, I think it's a apropos question to ask, as we have been walking through, if you're taking these past 7 days, today included, if you have been reading, taking in that spiritual bread that is the Word of Jesus Christ, well, during the days of unleavened bread, as we understand, God is leading the children out of Egypt on this trip. And I imagine, in my brain, it to be something like a bit of a road through the Exodus account. You would likely see there are pit stops. There are times that he will turn that car around, right? There are those moments in this journey. And they start off in Ramses, right? The day of unleavened, or the Passover portion of it, they take the symbols with the lamb. Then they gather everything up at the morning. They've got their bread and the kneading bowls. They take care of the remainder of whatever is left of the lamb, right? They burn that. And then they're going and they're plundering the Egyptians on the way to Sukkoth, right? And so then they leave Sukkoth on the 15th. And then they go from Sukkoth. It's about like 7-8 miles between Ramses and Sukkoth. And then they go from Sukkoth and they're walking to Elam. Sorry, not Elam, Etham. And that, depending on how you interpret where they crossed the Red Sea, there's a whole bunch of discussions on that. But it's a bit of a trek. And then they go to Migdol, and they're there on the border of the wilderness, and they're there. They can see the Red Sea, and they're kind of wandering about. And this is the time that Pharaoh says, well, hold on, let's go. Let's see these people and see why they seem to be lost. But if you follow the whole journey of Israel, go to Numbers 33, you will see that over the course of 40 years, they camp at 32 different places. If you thought that you were like, maybe you had a family member who was an army person, you moved a lot, my wife's dad is a pastor, so they moved a lot as a kid. It's like all these different spots, 32 spots in 40 years. That's a lot of travel. That's a lot of movement. And so today I want to look at what we can learn from that. Because throughout this journey, the children of Israel are questioning God, like, are we there yet, essentially? And it's a similar thing, because you see this with Jesus Christ in the New Testament as well. He's resurrected, he comes back, he's teaching, he spends 40 days with his disciples, and what do they ask? If you wanted to, let's turn there. Acts chapter 1, verse 6. Acts 1 and verse 6, we see them essentially asking a New Testament version of this question. Because the children of Israel in the Old Testament are going to a place none of them have been, but their forefather Abraham has been. They aren't familiar with it. He had to walk it, the height, the length, the breadth. God had him walk all over this place that he had promised. And they hadn't been there. And they had to rely on God to provide and to get them there. And so they're not sure whether they're there yet or not. Acts chapter 1 and verse 6, the disciples say to Jesus, they say in the latter half, he says, Lord, will you at this time restore the kingdom? Is it here yet? Are we there yet? Is this the right time for us to be able to consider this? I want to look at, I'm going to bring out 4 points here from the Exodus of the children of Israel as we move beyond the days of unleavened bread. Because we've been doing this for 7 days, and as I kind of talked about on the Sabbath prior, we're wanting to develop these new habits. Be able to have something that is instilled in us that is not just temporary, but something that actually initiates a change. And remember, I talked about God setting us up for success with that, because we're having an environmental shift, we're having goals set for us, we're having all those things that I discussed, behavioral changes, all of those things to get us into that 60 to 80% success rate of changing who we are and how we function. So today I want to look at that. And the first concept when we're talking about road trips is you have to leave. The departure. The departure. Now, I don't know how your household works, but when we depart, there's a checklist of things, whether in your mind or not, that it has to get done. You don't want to come home. I don't want to come home and feel like my house, after I've just been gone, is not like, ah. And so we like to make the beds. We like to vacuum, make sure it's clean, that there aren't dishes in the sink. All of these things you're trying to do before you can leave, that the dog is inside. There's a checklist of things that you have to do. It's not just leaving. Well, the children of Israel are in a similar fashion. If you recall again on the Passover evening, they're eating the lamb, but he says, okay, but you need to be watching. Belt on your waist, staff in your hand. You need to be, you know, sandals on your feet. Be ready to go. Everything is checked off. And you can kind of get that feeling if you're getting ready to leave for the feast. It's the night before. You might have a little bit of that nervous energy. But this departure is a big thing. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 12 and verse 15. When we're talking about a departure, there's not just the physical departure of leaving. There are a lot of other things. There are a lot of other things that come into that. And what we read here, we're going to read a physical change in Exodus chapter 12 and verse... That's Leviticus. That's why there's no verse 12. Exodus chapter 12, just in case you were wondering, there's no verse 12 in Leviticus, or verse 15 in Leviticus 12. Exodus chapter 12, verse 15 says, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever eats leaven from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. This is something that is different. It's a departure from what was normal. Right? If you think about words, there are the base root word, and this is a big thing when you're getting into any kind of exegetical study. If you're looking at the root word of something, what does it mean? And then you have, to make it confusing, you have prefixes and you have suffixes. But you have to have the base word first. So the base word here is leaven. And then to change it, you unleaven it. So their normal mode of things is leavened bread. Their normal mode of life, our normal operating position is that of being leavened, that of being carnal, sinful individuals. And our job then, as we depart, just as the children of Israel did, our job is to add that prefix to it, de-leaven, to decarnalize, to not be carnal anymore, to go away from that. And this, again, shows the genius of God and how he set all of this up, because he set it in place so that they're leaving that behind. Because they didn't even have time to bake it. So it's like, hey, you know what? I've been there. You bring everything out of the fridge. You put it into the cooler. Didn't have time to make the sandwiches that we thought. It just goes into the cooler. We'll take care of it on the road, right? And when you're doing the trip. But they're departing, and they're leaving the sin behind. We are called to do that same thing. If you go down to verse 39 here again in chapter 12, Exodus chapter 12, verse 39, it says that they baked the unleavened cakes of the dough which they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were driven out of Egypt and could not wait, nor had they prepared provisions for themselves. Now this is something that they did at Ramses, and if you've ever been around a road trip and you're leaving, again, I don't know how your house is. Our house has a slightly elevated fervor, one could say, anxiety, stress. You might even go as far as saying, like, when you're trying to get out, like, no, did you get all this? Did you check all the things off? Did you grab this? Did you remember your water bottle? Do you have your suitcase? All these things you're trying to make sure that you have. And what we see here is the children of Israel didn't really, they were thrust out. The Egyptians, you know, Pharaoh gives that call at midnight during the evening, when they're not even supposed to be leaving their house, he says, get out! And they're being encouraged to take this. Go! Leave us! We don't want you here anymore. And so they're really thrust out. And this is a big thing, too, because when we're talking about departure, you know, it's nice that you can set a time. You're like, oh, I would like to leave about this time. That would be fantastic. Right? We'll be able to get all the things done. They were thrust out of Egypt. So sometimes when you're pushed a little, right, you don't get... And Paul is talking to the church in Corinth. He's not just talking about physical bread, if you're looking at the context. He's talking about spiritual stuff. He's talking about this as a symbol. And he says, therefore, in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 7, therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump. I think I brought out the point. When's the last time you took leaven out of a loaf of bread? It doesn't happen. The only way that you get leaven out, and I'll put air quotes on out, the only way that you get leaven out of bread is you cook it. You've got to give it some heat. Because if you go to use that ground up bit of bread that you just baked to a crisp and toasted it and all that stuff, it goes back to essentially a flour concoction. But it won't puff up if you cook it again and add water to it. You'd have to re-leaven it. Right? So the only way is going through some fire, which the children of Israel definitely, Pharaoh's chasing them. And when we go out of sin and we depart, does it not pull at us? It lies at the door and its desire is for us, and we have to rule over it. It wants us, it wants to pull us back in. And so we're told here by Paul, it says, purge out the old leaven, which means we're going to have some heat, we're going to have some pressure, we're going to have some difficulty, since you truly are unleavened, for indeed Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us. And we're reminded back to the fact that Christ is the Passover. Christ is the one who makes it possible for us to be able to leave the sin behind, to not be seen as a sinful, carnal individual, but to be seen as cleansed, as reconciled to our Father. So just as the Israelites left in haste, they didn't allow the bread to rise. Christians, we need to promptly depart from sin. If we are a Christian going like, well, you know what? I know I have to leave sin. I'll just go slowly away from sin. We have the wrong attitude, right? If that's how we're functioning. Well, let me just bring a little bit of it along. Because again, let's think about how the Israelites dealt with leaven. This is at a time, I talked about the different types of leavening agents, but this is a time where we're talking about yeast. Only the biological thing that eats and consumes everything is what they were dealing with. And in order to leaven something, if you ever start off doing sourdough and you're a cheater, you will get a starter piece from someone else, right? But if you're going to go hardcore, you're going to leave that lump out for a bit to get the yeast spores from the air. And you know what? It takes 2 to 3 days in order to be able to get enough spores on that to start getting leavening going. Which means that you have to consciously be willing to leaven something. So when God tells Israel, don't bring the leavening with you, you would have to really work to make sure that you're going against what he said, because you're doing this for multiple days to get your bread, to get your leavened bread. Right? And he says, depart, leave it. So pack it up, go, we're leaving now. So we have to be willing to promptly depart from it and remove everything. Again, likewise for us with sin. To hang on to it, to cultivate it, be like, well, it's okay, I'll just feed it a little bit. I'll bake it into something later. I'm not doing that now. We should not be thinking about that with sin. Depart. Leave. Leave it behind. It is time to go. So that first point again, departure. Second point, when we're talking about our road trip out and the Israelites' road trip out, is navigation. Now, again, I don't know how your car is. I remember how the car was when I was a kid growing up. If you're familiar, unless you've got a two-door coupe, it's only got 2 seats in it, there are rules about how a car functions, right? And who does what in which position. You have the steering wheel. The seat behind the steering wheel, that person is the driver. All right, we're getting there. Now the seat, behind the steering wheel, that's the back seat, not the driver. Right? Now the seat that is beside the seat, behind the steering wheel, that's a passenger spot. Oftentimes, the navigator. Right? Now, I love GPS now. But back in the day, beforehand, I mean, I've driven across this country multiple times with friends. I remember when it was just an atlas, and between the atlas time and this, you had MapQuest. Anybody remember MapQuest? You'd print those off. Well, before MapQuest and in between the atlas time, you had the triptychs. You could go to the feast, you could call somebody, you would call your travel agency, and they would, for free, they would tell you where all the construction was, what place to avoid, and it was wonderful. But before that was the Atlas, and before the Atlas, it was anybody's game, right? Maybe there's a gas station, maybe there's a hotel. You weren't sure if there was going to be a vacancy or not. It was just a roll of the dice, if you will. But that navigation is such an important thing. And if you remember when we started getting into this digital age, remember the original Garmins or the TomToms? Make a U-turn. I can't make a U-turn. It's illegal. I see it on the post up there. I can't turn. I don't know where to go. Navigation is huge. There were times where the pace that the driver wants navigation might not align with the pace that the navigator is giving navigation. Perhaps the person who is in the seat beside the seat that is behind the wheel forgets that their principal job is to navigate, and they decide to sleep. How dare they sleep? Their job is to navigate. And so we're all chuckling because you recognize that it's a big deal when you're going on a trip to know where you're going. And for the children of Israel, God is a genius, because what does God give them? Let's go to Exodus chapter 13, verse 21. Exodus chapter 13, verse 21. We see here what God sets in place. Exodus chapter 13, verse 21. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light so as to go by day and by night. And he did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. This is fantastic, because this takes GPS and navigation to a whole other level. Because another thing that you'll notice is sometimes you don't even have to be in the car to navigate. There is a little bit of a generational gap, and today I think a lot of people are like, just give me the address, I'll punch it in, and it'll tell me how to get there. Now, things have gotten a lot better, because you're not getting sent down to weird areas of town and perhaps less than desirable areas of town anymore like you used to. But it's pretty accurate. But then there's also so what you want to do is you're going to go out, you're going to take this road, and you're going to go out till you pass the red barn. It's got a big tree next to it. And then you're going to go take a left. And so you get these different types of directions. For people who've been in the area for a long time, you might know that there are multiple ways to get somewhere. In fact, here, I was having a conversation with someone this week about how to get here, whether you come in through town or whether you take 155 south to get here. Or which direction do you want to go? And different people have different interpretations of that. The beauty of what God does here in Exodus 13 is, I cannot be a pillar of cloud, and I cannot be a pillar of fire. So when you're asking, who's the navigator? Which way are we going to go? Ha ha! Follow God. Right? There's nothing else to follow. It doesn't matter who's lived there the longest and knows where the nearest oasis is. You're going where the pillar goes, or else you don't have light and you don't have protection. Remember, when they got to the Red Sea, the cloud moves to behind them, protects them. So all these things that God is providing for them to be able to accurately, correctly navigate towards the promised land, it's because they're following Him. We need to follow God. It can be so easy for us to rely on other people, or think that maybe relying on ourselves. And I gave that announcement because it's like I was going in and I was reading and I wasn't accurately running everything against the same checks and balances, right? We need to make sure we're going to Scripture. We need to make sure we're going to the source. That's another thing. It's like there are so many times where people can present themselves as a source of light. None of us is ever the source of light. We can be reflectors of God's light. And that's an amazing thing. But all we will ever be is judged as to how well and how accurately we reflect His light. He's the source of the light that we can see. He's the source of the truth. He's the source of the navigation. We don't want to be listening to someone else to tell us, oh, hey, just go over this way. We want to make sure that we're going the proper direction. Let's go to Psalm 119. We see this beautifully, right? You take kids out, what happens? The moment you get out of the car when you're camping, they run around and they're crazy. And then, what happens? They find the flashlights to help you set things up. What happens when a kid gets a flashlight? 3 seconds later, you can't see. You got bright spots in your eyes because the flashlight, flashlights are for kids, just in case you didn't know. I've done this to my parents. Everyone does this. This is how we roll as little kids with flashlights. but we don't light the ground. God's saying, I'm going to light the ground. I imagine, this is my brain, imagining the visual of the pillar of fire and the pillar of cloud. It's like they're following a tornado. Most people don't follow tornadoes, and it's intriguing. They're following this, like, this tornado thing that's going through the desert. And then at night, you ever see like those, I think about it as like golden hour in the evening when it's kind of got that warm aura of going through. And it says it's bright enough that they can walk. And so you've got this kind of like beautiful, tall, fiery tornado that they're following. But it's like, you know the path, you know the way to go because it's right there. If someone tells you, shouldn't we be going that way? The cloud's going that way. Pretty clear. This is the way we're supposed to go. There's no question that we can't put ourselves, inject ourselves into that. John chapter 14, let's look at the New Testament. Again, something we oftentimes read during the days of unleavened bread. John chapter 14, verse 6. I'm going to do what I do. I'm going to go to verse 1. John 14, verse 1. Jesus is talking to his disciples. He says, "Let not your heart be troubled." The Israelites, we know, were troubled. When they're watching, they end up looking back and they're seeing Pharaoh come and his chariots. It says, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me." So there's this transference of faith is essentially what Jesus is talking about. Don't just, if you believe in God, you've seen what he does. You understand, as Peter said, you are the Son of the living God. And Jesus says, no one has revealed this to you except for the Spirit. So there's this understanding that Jesus is linked with God. He says, well, if you believe in God, transfer that faith over. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. And if it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. He is going, has gone, to a place that no one else has been. Now, we can either rely on someone who has never been there to think of some way to give us directions to go a place that they have no idea what it's like. Because we don't know what it's like. He says, I've been there. I'm going there. I'm going to prepare a place for you. And verse 4, and where I go, you know, and the way you know. Because he wants to come back and get them. That's what the bridegroom is doing. He goes off to prepare a place. He comes and he gets the bride. And he brings her to the place that he has prepared in his Father's house. That's the traditional, that's what Jesus is trying to point out here in the analogy. He says, I've been there. I will go get it ready and I will come back and get you. Follow me. Right? That's what he did with Abraham. He says, Abraham, and this is where Abraham is a type for Jesus, walk the whole area. See the whole space. I'm going to give this to your descendants. And no one saw it other than him, Isaac. Jacob had a little bit of it. And then they go into Egypt. Nobody alive in Egypt had ever seen the promised land. And so they have to rely on the one who had been there to get them there, to navigate them there. And that's what the cloud, that's what Christ is doing. He's navigating them there. We have to rely on his navigation. He's been there. Why would you ask someone for directions to get to a place they've never been? When you have the source of the directions, like, I made the map. I programmed the GPS. Well, let me just go ask someone else, Jesus. Thank you very much. That doesn't make any sense. Jesus says, follow me. And so we have that opportunity. He is the way. Let's read down through to verse 6. He says, I am the way. Because Thomas says, Lord, we don't know where you're going. And how can we know the way? Exactly. Because we've never been there. It's not who we are. This is not what we eat. This is not how we function. We have not been perfect. So therefore, listen to somebody who has. And Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. We have to go through Jesus Christ. He's been there. He guides us. We take in the bread, right? Which leads us right into our third point. We've talked about departing. We've talked about navigation. The third point is sustenance. He is the way. He is the bread of life. He is what feeds us. We have to rely on him for our spiritual sustenance. Now, again, if you've ever gone on a road trip, food is vitally important. If you go on a really long road trip, it becomes very, 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 very important. But one of the things we'll often go and like, well, what in the fridge is going to go bad during the amount of time that we're here? We don't want to leave that. Pop that into the cooler. And then you like eat off of that. And then you have to make a decision on where you're going to go. Right? And that's a fun thing. Because even if you have things in the cooler, perhaps you might be in a circumstance where even when you have things in the cooler that are edible, just fine for nutrients, people look in there and they say, I don't want to eat that. I want something else. I'm starving. Did you look in the snack bag? I don't want to eat that. Hypothetically speaking, everybody, hypothetically speaking, you might also notice as you go on trips that you, as the parent, and again, hypothetically speaking, you will realize that you are brutally traumatizing your children because you're not feeding them. They're practically dying. Because, God forbid, you forget to have a snack with you. And the children of Israel, we saw that they were forced out in haste, that they only had what they could carry with them on their backs and bound up in their kneading bowls, so they didn't have enough food. So they start running out of food and they say, "Ah, what are we going to do?" And so God blesses them with manna, which is a wonderful miracle. He provides sustenance. Let's go to Exodus chapter 16. And much like you may have experienced and I may have hypothetically experienced in my life, the children of Israel, after this miracle in Exodus 16, not too long after that, they act as if there's nothing to eat. Because now you've run out of the food. Sometimes when you run out of the food and you're going on your road trip, you get to where you're like, all right, let's stop, we'll get something to eat. And then a new sort of discussion comes up. Where are you going to go? Because however many people there are in your car, there are going to be that many different ideas on where you should go. And so then there's spirited conversation. Desires are made known. Compromises are made until finally you say, no, we're going here. Hypothetically speaking. This is what we're going to eat. And here in Exodus chapter 16, verse 4, we see here that God says, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you. And the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. I think this is such an interesting usage of terms because they were walking. This is what they were doing. Again, 32 different locations in 40 years. They are moving a lot of people. And they did get to camp for some time. But he's raining bread from heaven. They say, ah, I'm practically dying. Being Israelites, they're very hyperbolic here. I think it's hilarious that God is also commiserately hyperbolic because he says, I'll give you something. I'll give these tiny little bits of coriander that taste like honey and you've got to pick them up off the ground. I think he has a sense of humor. So they have to pick up the manna, but he rains down bread. He provides for them. He cares for them. You're going on that trip. And there are times where if you've ever gotten to the point where you're like, okay, it's snack food. Maybe you like to have beef jerky when you're going. Maybe you like to have a trail mix. Whatever it is that you like in the car ride. But then when you get to your destination, it's just so nice to have real food. It's so nice. We talked about the Wave Sheaf offering that opened up the entrance to that real food in the promised land, right? But they're having all this trip food all along. They're like, all we have is this manna. Oh, you're killing me, God. All we have is this. And so he's like, fine, I'll give you quail for a night. But they had an attitude about that. And so there are consequences for it. Hopefully you can see the analogy of the road trip here. Perhaps you hear a little bit of in your ears if you've gone on these road trips. But they are having to rely on God. They're dead, right? God, you know, through Moses, gave them bread from heaven, but my Father gives true bread from heaven. And he says right here in verse 35, he says, I am that bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst. The Samaritan woman at the well, oh, I'd like to have that water. These people here are like, oh, I'd like to have that bread. That miraculous bread. He is the bread of life. Again, he is the way, the truth, and the life, as we just read in John 14, verse 6. He says, I am the bread of life. So if we're leaving behind the old life, the past life, following him, well, then we ought to be eating what he's providing. Instead of being like, I don't like it. Right? We go through and depending on how what your relationship is with unleavened bread, you might not like it, you might really like it. But suffice the same thing as leavened bread. Right? If you try to make yourself a matzo sandwich, I'd like a turkey and cheese matzo sandwich, please. What do you end up with? Crumbs and turkey and cheese. Right? So you have turkey cheesy hands and you've got crumbs everywhere else. It's just not the same. When God says, this is what I'm providing, it's everything you could possibly need. Think about this. If somebody offers you an opportunity, I'd like to take you on a trip. All expenses paid. Don't worry about it. You don't have to worry about traffic. I will drive the entire time. You don't have to worry about weather. I'll take care of it. You don't have to worry about where we're going to eat. I will cover all of that. That sounds pretty good, right? Until you start thinking to yourself, hold on. Where are we going? What do I have to pack for? How long are we going to be gone? We're eating there again? Right? You have these things that start to crop up. But Jesus says, you know what? I am the bread of life. And we say, whoa, is there a different kind of bread? No, there's not a different kind of bread. It's everything you possibly need. Everything you could possibly need. And so many times we try to sit there and supplement the menu. And again, I'll bring out that if the children of Israel wanted leavened products on this journey, they would have had to work very hard to get leavened products. And it could not be made with manna because that thing goes rotten. You can't leaven that thing over 3 days. All you got are like stinky worms, right? And then you're that person who wasn't listening. I don't know. They have that one story of the man who was collecting sticks on the Sabbath, and now he's immortalized in Scripture. And then, there was more than one person because it's like, oh, and it was stinky, and people knew. But you had to go and buy flour from someone else if you're going to do a leavened product or a leavened cooking something. But God was providing everything. 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 8. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 8. This is something that we're admonished to do. We read verse 7. Now let's read verse 8. We purged out the old leaven, that there may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us. Verse 8. Therefore let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, which is a whole thing in itself, because if you've done any kind of baking, yeast has a lifespan, and the longer you go, the more the yeast spores are likely to not germinate, if you will, in the bread. They will die, and so they won't create the leavening reaction. They won't grow as well. It's not as it's an old leaven is going to get you. I think I've shared that I've had bread that was overproofed, and it gets sour, and it gets hard, and it is dense, and it is nasty. Ugh, I can still taste it when I think about it. Old leaven is kind of the same way, where you're going to go, it's just not going to leaven and puff it up. So get rid of that old stuff, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, which if you eat an overproofed or a loaf of bread with old leaven, there's probably going to be a little bit of malice and gnashing of teeth, perhaps some wickedness that is there, but we don't keep the feast with that, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. We're doing something different. The purity that is there in the bread that Jesus offers is what we should be taking in. He says, depart from that old way. Do something different. I will guide you. I will lead you. I will provide for you. And then we get to the fourth point. We have the departure. We have the navigation. We have the sustenance. Then we have the destination. As I was kind of alluding to earlier, where are we going? What do I have to plan for? Hold on, are you sure we want to go there? I heard this other place is quite nice this season. Right? Let's go there instead. No, he sets the destination as well. We need to embrace the totality of what he is doing with us. The children of Israel, it's like they'd heard of this place. The last time anybody is recorded in Scripture as having gone to the promised land is when a whole party brought the bones of Israel up and buried him at the cave of Machpelah. And they said, wow, this must have been a great man. That's the last time we have recorded of anybody leaving Egypt. So they didn't know where they were. leaving Egypt to go into the promised land, right? We know that Moses went out into the wilderness, but going into the promised land there, this is a spot that God had set aside for them. And so to think, well, maybe we should go somewhere else. If you actually look at other interactions with Israel, like when or Judah, when Judah's getting taken over, like, well, let's go back down to Egypt. Let's go to a different spot other than where God wants us to go. And God was talking through Jeremiah, says, don't do that. You're going to die. Don't do that. It's going to be bad. And they don't listen to him. They don't listen to him. But we need to go where God guides and directs us. Paul answered this when the Spirit stops him from going to Macedonia, right? He's listening to that guidance and that direction and embracing where God has taken him. Chapter 19 of Exodus. Let's turn there. Exodus chapter 19. God has a very special destination selected, not only for Israel at that time. Destination is not just like departure. It's not just a physical thing. Like we're departing from this place and going to here. Because you can depart from this style of life and take on a new style of life, right? An unleavened life. Well, you can have a destination that is a physical place, which for the children of Israel, the promised land. But the destination for us is not a physical place. And it's alluded to all the way back here with the children of Israel in Exodus 19, verse 5. It says, now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people. For all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which shall speak to the children of Israel. God wanted Moses to tell Israel, this is what I want for you. This is really the ultimate destination that I want for you. I want you to become this. Become a nation that is a light and a beacon, reflecting my light, reflecting my morals and values, reflecting the belief system that I am giving you. Again, being a kingdom of priests, to be his own special treasure. That's a beautiful thing to be able to be. To be able to be that for God. Again, that's alluding to this pearl of great price, this treasure that's in the field, the various things that we see brought out in the parables in the New Testament. But he says, if you will indeed obey my voice, you shall be to me a kingdom of priests. This is an interesting thing because this is here in Exodus 19. What happens in the next chapter? We have the giving of the Ten Commandments. Now, the children of Israel at this time, for as much as I might kind of like joke about how kids behave on a road trip, what we have here in this account with Israel is that it was kind of a role reversal. It was the adults who were throwing the fits about where they were going and what they were doing and what they were eating and all of those things. Because what we see is that they left. They were happy to leave. You have this adventure you're going on. There's a nervous excitement. You're like anxious to go. Yes, let's get out of here. Let's go do something new. And they're moving along. And then the moment something happens, they're like, oh, not sure God's got me there. Hold on. And then their faith was only as far as the next trial. And what we see is nested in here, they're told, this is what I want for you. And the children of Israel say to God, all that you say, we will do. But the adults never bought in to the destination that God was bringing them. They were so close. They could have been there. They scouted this thing out. They could have been the other side. And they go and they eat the bread of life for them, the manna from heaven. And then they go into covenant with God and they say, all that you say we will do. And then Moses goes up to get it codified on tablets of stone. And while Moses is up there getting it codified on tablets of stone, they recant and they breach the covenant and they go back and they're condemned. It's a pretty amazing short-term turnaround. But that's something for us to be mindful of, because we can go through baptism. And the important thing is that from the time of baptism, we go through baptism, we have the laying of the Spirit because we're in covenant with God. From that time, we have to think about it. We have a crown and we're holding it in our hand. Is someone going to just take it? Are we going to drop it along the path? Because for the next 40 years, they have to figure out, like, how are we going to go through life? What are we going to do? Revelation tells us, it's like, let's hear. I have given you my Spirit as a down payment of the things to come. It's ours to lose. And the children of Israel lost it because they didn't embrace the destination where they were going. And as a result, they didn't go into it. They didn't inherit that. Romans chapter 6 and verse 4, we're admonished here by Paul again. Romans chapter 6 verse 4 says, therefore we were buried with him through baptism. Again, the children of Israel did that through the Red Sea with the cloud over top, before them and around them, and the sea on both sides. They're baptized through Christ into death, that just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. This is a beautiful thing. I mentioned this on the first day of Unleavened Bread. In the middle of the days of Unleavened Bread, you know what happens? Jesus Christ was resurrected. It's a beautiful thing, and he's walking in newness of life. Now, oftentimes we'll take this, or at least I have taken this, as just, okay, be a different person. The old man, dead, right? We're living in a new way. We're living in an unleavened way. But I would like to maybe perhaps expand our thought on this, because how was Jesus Christ walking about with his disciples after he was resurrected? He concealed their eyes when he's walking to Emmaus, looking like some stranger. He pops into a room and scares them. He can look like a gardener. He can show all of the injuries that he received and then make them go away. It's pretty miraculous. He's walking a different walk. If we say, okay, hold on, what are we aspiring to? We don't know what we're going to be like, but we know then when we have that change, we will see him as he is. We will be like him. Newness of life. That is a new kind of, I can't do that now. I can run really hard, and maybe if you have a really thin drywall, I could burst through it. That's the best I got, right? But that's not how we walk. And so if you have someone promising a new way, a different way, that if we will walk, if we will leave what we were and who we were, and we will follow his navigation, and we will eat what he eats, he will bring us to a destination that is drastically different than what we are now. And the days of unleavened bread, these 7 days, are just the start of that. This is just the start of the walk. It's not, we have not yet arrived at a destination. They have that saying, it's like, life is a journey, not the destination. They've never gone on a road trip. They're liars. They don't realize it. They put that on a little thing to sell at Hobby Lobby, and it just makes people angry. Parents angry. Because you realize that they don't know what they're talking about. Because everybody who's had kids in the car will recognize, or maybe if you're a bus driver, more kudos to you if you've ever done that, right? If you've got that, you just recognize just how much consternation there is. It's not about the journey. I just want to get there. That's why you go on a trip. You go on a trip to get to the destination. You want to be at the end. And then you start asking the question, are we there yet? Right? I just want to be there already. I just want to go there. Let's go to Galatians chapter 2, if you would. Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. We need to be walking in newness of life, seeing that it needs to be real for us. You've got a pillar of fire. You've got a pillar of cloud. We've got food provided. We're safe. We're not where we used to be. All those things that God has done through deliverance from Egypt, from our Egypt, from a way of sin. Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. It says, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. If we are not embracing the destination, it can be very easy to look at this and be like, well, I guess I'll eat unleavened bread. I can't stand it. It's disgusting. It's cardboard. I don't enjoy it. I didn't really have fun eating it this past week. Right? We can be very dour about it. But what Paul is pointing out here is that we have a choice. Right? We could have gone and eaten leavened bread and donuts and pizza and done whatever we wanted this week. We could have. But we all have to answer then to God and say, well, I told you if you eat leaven or if you have leavening in your homes, you're cut off. So now you have to live with that. Right? If we're abiding by him and we're saying, I want to be at the destination where you are taking us. I want to go to that spot. And we haven't bought into it. It can be so easy to look at it and be like, I'm being forced to do this stuff. I don't have a choice. But what Paul is saying here is, he's saying, I have bought in so much to what you're doing that I am being guided and directed by Jesus Christ. I step back and I say, you know what? You know how to drive. You know how to navigate. You know where to stop for food. I'm going to sit in the back seat. I don't have to be the driver and try to make it where we're going. I don't have to try to tell you how to get there. In fact, I will be here as a child, relying on you, trusting you to feed me, trusting you to drive me, trusting you to get me where we need to go. That's what Paul is saying here. He's like, I'm not trying to sit there and be the driver. I'm not trying to be in charge of this whole trip. He says, I've been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. He has been put himself as subservient to Jesus Christ. He's following. He's watching. He's taking in what he needs to take in. That's what we need to do. That's what we need to do. The days of unleavened bread remind us of that. As we're eating the unleavened bread, we should be not just eating unleavened bread, but we should be diving into Scripture and say, okay, what does the bread of life, what does Jesus, the Word, all synonymous, tell me that I should be doing? Tell me where I should be going, what I should be fixing, what else I should be leaving behind. We should be going into the book to look for those things. I have in the past saw how long I could eke out just eating unleavened bread. Just to try to, you say, like, keep that feeling going. And be like, okay, what else can I do? I want to be very clear. This is the Nathan thing. Nathan has thought about this. I was like, just trying to see how far I could go. Because the children of Israel went for 40 years. It was, for most of them, the rest of their life. The 600,000 people we have numbered is besides women, children, and the animals. 600,000 men die. Well, 599,998 men died because Joshua and Caleb went into the promised land. So, but they died. They died. It was their whole life that they had to give to living an unleavened way, and they still didn't get the point. For us, this should be the starting point for us to be able to walk in newness of life. The journey from Egypt to the promised land, it should be a mirror for us. It is a road trip for us moving forward. We want to depart from that life of sin. We want to allow God to navigate and to follow His guidance in our life. We want to rely on Him for our spiritual sustenance. And we want to embrace that destination that He has in front of us. Because for us, it really is a lifelong road trip with our Father.